Hello, and welcome to Fidelity Connects, connecting you to the world of investing and helping you stay ahead. Portfolio manager Hugo Lavallee joins Pamela Ritchie for another Fidelity Connects podcast. Hugo manages both the Canadian Opportunities Fund as well as the Greater Canada Fund. In this episode, Hugo explains how his contrarian style of investment has opened up opportunities. He takes a 2 to 3 year rolling time horizon when looking at specific companies, meaning that he looks at companies he can buy and what has fallen, but will be better in 2 to 3 years. He believes that consumer trends have been accelerated, specifically the work from home culture, travel, and an increase in outdoor activities. He also sees a massive trend in green initiatives, which is something he's incorporating in his portfolio. And when asked what types of companies he's investing in, he points out that it's not only about what you own, it's about what you don't own. Commentary surrounding COVID-19 and financial markets is frequently changing. Today's podcast was recorded on September 23rd, 2020. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the participants and do not reflect those of Fidelity Investments Canada ULC or its affiliates. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment, tax, or legal advice. It is not an offer to sell or buy, or an endorsement, recommendation, or sponsorship of any entity or security cited. Read a fund's prospectus before investing. Funds are not guaranteed. Their values change frequently, and past performance may not be repeated. Fees, expenses, and commissions are all associated with fund investments.
Glad to have you join us here today. It's sort of an exciting day. It's sort of a weird day in the markets. We're continuing to see volatility, unquestionably. I wonder if you can give us a sense of where you think, how you think we're doing. We have certainly all these fears, but how are consumers holding up right now?
Yeah, well, it's been a really weird recession. And one thing I've been very sensitive to with the team is the changing consumer behaviors and where are the buckets of money going, right? So we're all spending a lot less money on travel. But some of us are lucky enough that, you know, our personal lives and our jobs are doing okay. Then there's changing consumer behaviors. And I think we've been on top of it. I'm really proud of the team there. Our two retail analysts in Toronto done a really good job, one on the US side, one on the Canadian side with those. So just to name a few, the cycling trend, the at-home trend, the fintech trend, you know, the acceleration of this cash going away. You know, it's like there's some things that are happening, and I think we just accelerated the future for some of these trends. So I think the team's done a good job at identifying a few companies, and especially in the Greater Canada Fund, where I have a little bit more flexibility with up to 49% foreign content, to being able just to, you know, beat the competition, get a little bit ahead of my competitors a couple of weeks, couple of months ahead. And we think this thing is changing and accelerating. There's some US retailers that for years that I owned have had a 5% comp, and now they're comping 40% because it's a home as a sanctuary. So, and I think the funds have benefited from that.
It's so interesting that you've been ahead on some of those trends, as we say. You know, we mentioned the throne speech, which is coming this afternoon in Canada. How are you looking at this? How are you investing around it potentially? What do you think we're going to hear, or what trends will be pointed to?
Well, I'm expecting some green initiatives, right? So it's already been clear by the federal government, and I think this is on trend, and that's accelerating, and that's how we're going to rebuild our economy. So hopefully clients can remember that I've been talking about this trend. I've talked about it at the Roy Thompson Hall, and I think the pandemic has accelerated the need for this. I mean, if you look at the United States, people can look at the Biden plan, $2 trillion into green initiatives. And even if right now there's not a lot of support in the U.S. from the federal government, the states are really driving it with California, Oregon, and New York. So, you know, we're going to see what's going to come out today, but I'm expecting more green initiative. You know, I was watching 15 minutes of Monday Night Football on Monday, and Amazon's, you know, hosting an ad, and they want to go carbon neutral by 2040. And I mean, the puck's going in that corner, and I'm just trying to get there ahead of the other players. And, you know, I'm the first five fund manager, but you're seeing it more and more appear in my top 10, especially in Greater Canada. Just more green ideas. And I think it's the right thing to do. I think there's changing consumer behaviors. They're changing cost of capital for some companies because of ESG. It's a massive problem. I personally think carbon's the enemy. Time's running out a little bit. And you know, the trend's going to be there. And we just got to find the company. So Fidelity International has identified 600 global green companies where at least a third of their revenues come from some, you know, green initiative or climate initiative. So we just got to, I got to sort with the team to most of these names and pick the right ones for the funds.
So I want to ask you, it must go into all of the backdrop thinking, but we don't sort of see it in your top 10. Is the companies to avoid, as you say, cost of capital? I mean, you know, whether it is an actual carbon tax, as we think about, or some version of that, the idea is that there will be a type of punishment for huge emitters, right? So how do you avoid that situation?
That's a great question, because it's not only what you own, but it's also what you don't own. So for me, one thing I've been very sensitive over the last 12 months is the changing cost of capital for some of these businesses. You're seeing it in Europe. It's a tidal wave coming from Europe, and I think we're going to live it here over time. But some names are being blacklisted from institutional investors, you know, what you can buy. So it obviously changes the cost of capital. I think we're hearing from some of the big banks on the board is having discussions on, should we finance XYZ company? Are they stranded assets? Do they hurt our reputation? Or should we charge them a higher cost of capital because they're impairing our business? So it's all very nascent. You know, we're trying to stay on top of it. But I think for me, the message I want to leave clients is there's always things to buy. You just have to find them. So take energy, for example. I don't have a lot of energy exposure. I don't right now own many oil sands. And, you know, but during the pandemic, I'm like, wow, you know, the driving demand's down so much. I eventually will rebound. I need to find some play on that. And, you know, in my number one holding in Greater Canada is Darling, and it's a renewable diesel company. So here's a company that if the price of diesel goes up, they're going to do a little bit better. So it is a play on the recovering of the ban. But really what Darling is, for 40 years, it was a animal grease trap, you know, aggregator and cleaner, literally driving to McDonald's and taking the animal fat grease. But now with Valero, they have a JV where they transform it to renewable diesel. And what's interesting about renewable diesel, it has 70% less carbon content than regular diesel. So when California puts a $200 tax on carbon, it's incredibly lucrative for them to sell that product. So my point is there's some names to find on the same trend. You know, say on recovery of oil demand, you just got to find them. And it's been a good stock, and it's been a better stock than some of maybe these stranded assets. So I'm very sensitive to our fellow Canadians in Alberta. It's really tough economy right now. But I think for me, it's just trying to find some other companies that we can buy that will benefit from, you know, the economy coming back a little bit to normal, but on different trends.
You know, when you talk about that animal grease trap, it reminds me I really should be a vegetarian one day. But in any case, it sounds like an amazing investment. I'm curious, you mentioned, you know, at the board level, there are these discussions. I mean, you must be talking to management in a way. I mean, you're not traveling to see management in the same way, but it's actually allowed for other types of meetups, hasn't it? I mean, how much you always talk to management, has it increased?
Yeah, it's dramatically increased. Like it's been amazing, frankly, for a guy like me, because I believe it's not a stock market, it's a market of stocks, right? So you just, you know, we can sit on a dock with a beer or a glass of natural wine and chit-chat about the stock market, but that's really not what I do on a daily basis, right? So we come in and we have a ton of companies to talk to, and it's dramatically increased because everybody's from home or not traveling, and we can talk to the companies. So for the last 10 years, I just remember every year because it's my wife's birthday week, and I'm always in Toronto because Scotia has a Canadian retail conference. Well, this week I was able to take it from home, but at the same time, Mark and I were attending a Credit Suisse hydrogen conference, and normally you can never do that because it's a completely different city. I was incredibly busy last Tuesday, but it's just amazing how many companies we can talk to. So for a guy like me, it's really a bottoms-up stock picker and looking for contrarian ideas or trying to get ahead of the curve on changing consumer trends. It's been great because management's very available. Normally, you have to wait for the roadshow, or you have to fly over there, or you have to wait for them to come to Toronto or Montreal to meet them face to face. And now we're hitting so many companies. It's truly amazing. And I think, frankly, the funds have benefited from that. You see it in the returns.
You mentioned it's a market of stocks, and I've heard you say that before. This question coming in from one of the advisors is, do you see the potential for further corrections in the market this fall? I mean, I guess maybe just expand. You're looking at various stocks. When you see corrections, I mean, that gives you an opportunity, presumably. Do you want to just respond to that?
Yeah, I mean, corrections are healthy, right? I mean, if the market went up every day, there'd be so much risk taking, right? So you need corrections like over the last 2 weeks to shake off the weak hands, right? So for me, what I'm trying to do more than, frankly, the previous 11 years is stay more invested in the funds, run with less liquidity, stay aggressive, talk to a lot of companies. And when there's corrections, you can shift the buckets of money. I've used the pandemic and corrections into green stocks to further, to have more of these stocks in the portfolio. So you might really like an idea and all of a sudden it's down 15%. Well, you can add to it. So corrections are great for a guy like me because you get to, reinvest in your favorite ideas, tend to shake off the weak hands. Personally, I don't think there's any underlying really major trend like in the spring that's going to break this market. I mean, we'll see. I'm not allowed to make predictions. We might have some volatility over the November election, but again, that's not my daily day. I mean, we're ready for the Fidelity. We get ready ahead of the time. So about 2 months ago, we had every U.S. analyst at the firm run the scenario of a Democratic sweep with increased corporate taxes. So which companies would be affected the most? Which sectors would be affected the least? So we're ready if it happens. But I'm not gonna, build a portfolio around. I don't wake up in the morning, and if I spend 30 seconds on the U.S. election, I wasted 30 seconds. What I'm trying to do is focus on which companies can we buy, which companies are getting better, which companies have fallen on super hard times now, but we think they'll get better over 2, 3 years. And then it's like poker. You play the hands you're dealt, and if something else happens, we'll change our strategy, but that's what I'm trying to do. And I'm just trying to stay aggressive, talk to a lot of companies, and find stories.
I think you just answered one of the questions coming in, which is your thoughts on gold. So you just mentioned what sort of your allocation is for gold. You got it there, but it's not massive. How do you think about that?
Yeah, gold, to be frank, I was playing a little. I used to be the gold analyst. It's such a weird thing to analyze. In 09, when the market bottomed March 9th, I think 2009, gold stock, that was the peak the previous day. So they were horrible stocks in 09 from that point on. I was frankly playing a little bit the same playbook. They've been much better stock this time. I own them. I'm not super high conviction on them. I am sensitive to potential inflation in the future, because the central bank balance sheet, the expansion is truly massive, right? So if you believe that inflation eventually, if velocity picks up, inflation is based on money supply times velocity, and the money supply base is just astonishing how much it's gone up. But also inflation is driven by wage growth. So, I could see massive inflation 10 years from now. Over the next 2, 3 years, I think personally it's a little hard to see a lot of inflation because wage growth should be subdued, because unfortunately we have a high unemployment rate. So and they're not the best businesses in the world, and they have ESG problems. So, I'm kind of there, but it's a weird thing, gold to own, because it really serves not a lot of purpose except for a store of wealth for rich people. So, I'm there. It's not my favorite team. I'd rather find a great business with a ton of white space to grow that it's temporarily out of favor, and it will be back in favor over 2, 3 years. So some of the holdings I own, like Papa John's or Chipotle or Five Below, Five Below, the stores had to close during the pandemic. They lost 96% of their revenues. But it's a really good concept. It's super on trend. They provide exceptional value. They face less competition now from competitors. The stores have reopened. And in the pandemic, it was about 10 times our best guess at 2022 earnings for a company that's normally 30 times earnings. So, you know, if it goes back to 30 times earnings, that's a triple, and they had the balance sheets to survive. So those are the stories. That's my day to day. That's what I'm looking for.
You mentioned, you know, inflation 10 years out, some views. Another question coming in on just how you see the future. You know, it is a very difficult market. How do you look 5 years out? And if you can't completely, how do you work your sell discipline in? Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, so, you know, for me, it's always a rolling 2-3 years. That's how I think about things. You know, I think my crystal ball is as foggy as everybody else for the super future. I do think this pandemic, though, has accelerated trends. You know, I don't know if we're all going to be stuck in traffic 2 hours a day to go back to the office 5 days a week. You know, I think we'll make our flights count more. I think biking's a real trend. I think working from home's a real trend. I think the outdoors trend is still big for now with this unfortunate pandemic. So, you know, for me, it's always kind of rolling 2, 3, 4 years. And what I mean by that is, you know, Chipotle, you had two shots on goal over the last 4 years. Once they were poisoning their customers and the stock got to 250. And the second shot on goal was during the pandemic when a lot of the dining rooms closed. So the stock got cut by more than half. But it's an incredible business run by an incredible team. They're focusing on digital. They're super on trend with, you know, better food, food with integrity, unbelievable management team with digital first strategy. And so, you know, sometimes you just get these opportunities and say, well, things will get better and people are still going to eat there. And they're going to face less competition to accelerate their store growth. So that's what I'm focused on. I like I said, I think there's some change in consumer trends that will stick. I mean, we're talking about Chipotle. I mean, last summer I had to leave my vacation in Maine and fly to Chipotle fly 6 hours to go for a 90-minute meeting with the management team and then fly back. And it's like, wow, that's probably not the best use of my time. So maybe in the future we'll do it differently. So I am sensitive to these changes, but for me it's more like a rolling 2-3 years. What's not doing well now? It could be Couche-Tard after a really tough fuel quarter, but that's a temporary shock and things will get better. So that's how I think about it.
So tell me a little bit about, you know, you mentioned, you know, the work situation may change. Lots of discussions around workspace, office space, that kind of thing. But broadly, how do you look at financials and maybe the real estate question within the financials equation?
Yeah, I don't own a lot of REITs. I think, unfortunately, it will be tough for some of them. My personal opinion is I think it's probably more like the 91, 92 recession in Canada or the 2009 to 2011 recession in the U.S. Like, it's, unfortunately, I think we're in for a long winter and maybe, you know, 2 years before we find the bottom. You know, there were talk here in Montreal on Sunday that we're going to reclose the dining room for restaurants. I mean, I'm really sensitive for these small business owners, and it's super tough. But there's a lease behind them as well, right? And there's a landlord. So I think on the real estate side, there's going to be shrinking real estate portfolios, unfortunately. So I'm less there. There's a couple of names to buy, but I'm not super excited about those. And, you know, I don't own any Canadian banks in both my funds. So I own one U.S. bank in Greater Canada. So I just think there's other opportunities. I don't hate them, but I think it's a long ways from maybe a rising yield curve, a steepening yield curve that would be good for them. And there's still going to be some consumers, unfortunately, that are suffering. So, and I'd like to point out, that's why I think sometimes my funds are a great complement, right? So Canadian opportunities, small mid-cap portfolio, you know, 10% max foreign holding. So it's Canadian stocks being Canadian stocks. So I've run the fund over the last 12 years. You know, the numbers have been satisfactory. And we've been able to do it in with different companies. You know, I'm going against the completion index, so it's TSX less TSX 60. So I think there's a lot of discretionary accounts out there. They own Royal Bank, they own Manulife, they own Enbridge, they own Suncor. I don't own any of these stocks. So I'm able to beat the market with just a different set of stocks. And for Greater Canada, why it's my preferred fund, it's just my best ideas, more concentrated, up to 49% foreign content. I can truly express more to, you know, green energy and, you know, more of the fidelity research to it. And Greater Canada has had better absolute numbers. Ops has had better relative numbers to the benchmark. And, you know, I think they're two good funds that serve two different purposes.
Is that where you can use some of these, or do you use some of these IPO stories within that? There's been a lot of them lately. It's been a hot market for IPOs. What type of exposure do you have to that?
Yeah, I can't name them because they're so current, but people should expect, especially for Greater Canada. I think the team this year has done an amazing job. I mean, the PM truly at Fidelity has the easy job on the IPOs because the analyst does all the hard work. I mean, I listen in on some of these IPO roadshow meetings, but the analysts do all the work. They set up the recommendation. And then our trader, we have a few traders that have been working so hard with the ECM group. Like we have a good, FIL has a good reputation, a good relationship with Goldman Sachs ECM. So, you know, for some of these IPOs, we're getting top five, top 10, top 15 allocations. And they make a difference in the funds. And we've also played with FIL. We get good allocation on Hong Kong IPOs or Asian IPOs. So I've participated in a few of those. So it's been really easy alpha, especially for Greater Canada. And, you know, some of them, they re-rate too quickly the first day and, you know, you unfortunately flip them. But some of them, we stay shareholders. Some of them, we buy more. So, you know, if some of you at home or at work or aren't able to participate in some of these, you know, these IPOs everybody's heard of, you know, the Greater Canada Fund specifically has been participating. Fidelity has been participating and been a good source of alpha this year for the fund.
Let's come back to the green space for a minute. I mean, as sort of a trend, and I think you mentioned maybe a few webcasts ago that, you know, isn't something that you were going all into, but you were sort of going along and taking the opportunities as they came, essentially, and adding where it made sense. How big of a trend is it for you to have within the fund? I mean, does it sort of, is it like a tech trend, or are there particular, is there an analogy that you can make for how you're incorporating green as something going forward?
Yeah, so if 10 would be, you know, 100% green fund, I'd say I'm a 3 or 4. You know, it's, I'm putting it in my process. I want it to keep rising, that number. But, you know, I'm also sensitive. I don't run a green fund, right? So I run a diversified fund. We're there to make money. One day I'd like maybe hopefully to fully express that through a different product. But for now, for me, it's driving it. It's slowly in my top 10, being very sensitive. And like you said, it's not only what you own, but it's also what you don't own, right? So internally, you know, I want to be the tip of the spear and the edge of the knife, you know, and driving that initiative internally. And if you can name the science fiction analogy, I just talked about that quote, you know, we should be friends and hang out. But you know, I'm pushing it internally. And I think I've had multiple discussions with my boss, Andrew Marchese, and we've come a long way as a group. And, you know, there's momentum there. And I think we're very lucky, because now that we're tied to FIL, which is based in London, I mean, they've been dealing with this stuff forever. So we can just kind of follow their lead. We're doing it all internally. There's an unbelievable ESG group based out of London. And again, I'm just pushing the E slowly with incremental names. And like I said, you know, last week I attended a hydrogen conference and you learn new names. And some of them, they're a complete science project and then the paybacks are not good and it's not for me yet, but some other ones, they're like, you know, they're on trend, they're making money. Like Darling on the renewable diesel side, which is called Diamond Green, their JV with Valero, they make unbelievable returns. I mean, they make probably the best returns of all of Valero's business. So it makes sense. It's on trend. This is great. Let's just buy a lot of it.
Right. I mean, when you think of sort of thought leaders, either within Fidelity or elsewhere, like, are there certain types of humility, and, you know, I'm thinking of a couple of people I think you've referenced in the past, but, you know, they're just the way you look at the markets, the way you look at your investing, you're a contrarian investor. I mean, just sort of remind us what that means in a time like this.
Yeah, so contrarian, the best way I can illustrate it is through an example, right? Because sometimes I get lost in the value versus growth debate. So let me give you an example that the contrarian investor buys it, but not the value or the growth manager. So take Chipotle during the food safety issue. And the stock gets cut by 2/3, goes from 750 to 250. The earnings get cut from $17 a share to 77 cents a share. So the average value manager might look at this and say, well, this is not cheap on price to book, and plugs it into Bloomberg and looks at the PE ratio and say, this is over 300 times earnings. I'm not buying this. It's not going well, but it's too expensive. The growth manager, the momentum manager is looking at this like nobody's ever eating at Chipotle again. And then the contrarian guy like me says, well, I think that's a pretty strong statement to make. I don't necessarily disagree. I don't necessarily agree. And it's 15 times the earnings they used to make. And this is a great business with great returns. And I don't think they were necessarily optimized at $17 a share. I think they could even own more in the future. So if I think they can own $20 a share or $25 a share, I mean, that stock at $250 is really cheap for the quality of the business. And there's a ton of white space. So at the time, Chipotle had 30, like literally 37 restaurants outside of the United States. I mean, there's 2,500 Chipotles in the world. There's 31,000 Starbucks. So there's just an unbelievable opportunity to grow the store base. There could be 10,000 Chipotles in the future. So, you know, you just take all that information together. And then there's an unbelievable executive that came in as Brian Nichols, that used to be the president of Taco Bell. Got to meet him in person 3 times, get to meet the team. And then they're driving that digital only. And it goes from a bad story to a better story than it was before. And eventually the stock made, you know, new all-time highs as people kind of understood that story. So there's one example where the value and the growth manager don't buy initially. And you're kind of there saying, and I've given the Five Below example when 96% of the revenues is gone because all the stores are closed. People know I own Papa John's, where, you know, the founder makes 2 comments that are unacceptable. And there's through a year and a half, you churn through, you know, change of the board, activist investor, change in management. And now with Shaq and Feeding America and hiring Americans, it's such a better story than before. The stock's been more than a double. So that's what I'm looking for as a contrarian investor.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point. Yeah, you know, you're ahead of things in a lot of situations. I want to ask you about other outdoor activities. You're a skier, aren't you? Aren't you? Don't you haul your children out of bed at some ungodly hour to get them to the ski? So have you bought things like outdoor equipment already to take care of all that?
You mentioned that because I want to cross country ski this year because I'm fortunate enough to live near downtown and near the mountain. And if we're stuck at home, I want to cross country ski. So I called the store. I want to beat the crowd. I want to be the first one to buy my equipment. And I'm afraid, you know, going to get there, it's all sold out. So I called up my local store, and it's a running store that turns into a cross country store in the winter. And I called them mid August, and they told me, like, yeah, mid August. They told me the stuff's only going to be there November 1st. And so, but that's how I do it. You know, I used this unfortunate pandemic to fly to Alberta, you know, visit one of the best parts of our country. I went to Banff, Jasper, Lake Louise, and it was amazing. Like, great to meet, see beautiful things, meet great people. The hotel was a third of the price of the previous year, of summer 19. I can use my points, you know, on the flight. It was unbelievable. And I did buy my carbon credits, by the way, but for the flight. But it's just, you know, I see opportunity in bad things, and for me it just comes really naturally. And the older I get, the more I embrace it, and the worse it becomes, frankly. And I keep having lunch earlier and earlier, you know, me, I'm trying to see the fun through that lens, and I'm just trying to get ahead of the competition. I hate waiting in line. It just gets worse as to get older, and I'm just trying to beat the crowd, and I try to do the same thing in the funds.
It's fantastic to speak with you always, Hugo. Thank you, and thanks for sort of outlining how you got to some of these great performance numbers as well. Great to see you.
Thanks a lot. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Fidelity Connects podcast. Please visit fidelity.ca for more information on future live webcasts. Don't forget to follow Fidelity Canada on Twitter, and subscribe to Fidelity Connects on your podcast platform of choice.